Tonight's preacher is not the normal preacher either. If you've heard me preach before, you already knew that. Question that we want to think about for a few minutes tonight is this one. What difference does a touch make? In the Hindu religion, there's a system of what are called castes, and there are divisions of people, and among that division, the lowest caste is called the untouchables. The untouchables are a group of people who, for a variety of reasons, are considered both polluted and polluting. They are relegated to their own communities, and contact with them, other people who are not untouchables want to avoid. The most notorious example of untouchables is the Dalit community of India, or the Dalit people of India. Mostly the Dalits are associated with certain occupations: garbage collectors, sewage workers, slaughterhouse workers, leather tanners. Leather tanning is a very disagreeable occupation, very difficult occupation. And it's also, this designation is also applied to people of other faiths. In India today, 90% of the Dalit are Buddhists. And by extension, the Dalit are the families of those people and the descendants of those people. So even if your father was a Dalit because he was a Buddhist and you converted to some other faith, you would still be considered in that category of people. By further extension, it's not only the people, it's communities in which they live. If you live in one of these communities, you one of the Dalit, one of the untouchables. And even though the practice of shunning the Dalit is officially outlawed in India now, it has been since India became a nation at the end of the Second World War, even though it's outlawed, it's still very widely practiced. One Dalit, K.R. Narayan, was elected president of India in 1997, but that in itself did not end the practice of shunning these people. It's been very difficult in the society, Indian society, to outlaw this practice of shunning the untouchable. So I want you to think for just a minute, to put yourself in the place of being a Dalit before the Second World War was fought. What would your life be like? You became a Dalit, you are a Dalit, because your grandfather was a farm worker, and he collected fertilizer, dung for fertilizer. This was a necessary occupation, and it's not something we'd want to do. But it's not something we would think would be disreputable. It has to be done if you're going to raise crops. But your grandfather did that, and your grandparents settled in a neighborhood with other people who had similar occupations. And so you were, as a descendant of a Dalit, you were a Dalit. There would be parts of a nearby city where you could not go. You could not enter a store in most parts of the city. You couldn't buy a bus or a train ticket. You couldn't ride on a section of a bus or train. You couldn't, unless it was a section that was made for your kind of people. Neither you nor your children could be educated in a public school. You couldn't attend any college or university, no matter how much money you had. And you could not be hired for any kind of food service work or retail work or as a doctor or as an attorney. You couldn't do any of those things. If you had been a Dalit, that's where you would have been in India before about 1940. In Judaism, this designation is called uncleanness, as we all know. And so, we want to think about for a few minutes about uncleanness. What, according to the law of Moses, was it to be unclean, or what made you unclean? There were some things in the law that made you unclean that seemed to be, if we read them, even knowing what we know, seemed to be rather arbitrary. For example, in Leviticus, the 11th chapter, the law reads, "These are the birds you are to regard as unclean and not eat, because they are unclean: the eagle, the vulture, the black vulture, the red kite, and so on. And then the next section, all flying insects that walk on all fours are to be regarded as unclean by you. There are, however, some flying insects that walk on all fours that you may eat. Those that have jointed legs for hopping on the ground, or those that may eat, you may eat any kind of locust or cricket or katydid or grasshopper, but all other flying insects that have four legs you're to regard as unclean. So there are certain birds that you could eat. You could eat chickens, you could eat, obviously, other kinds of birds, but these that are named you couldn't touch. You could not only not eat them, you couldn't touch them. Same way with insects. What's the difference between the insect you could eat and one you couldn't? We won't be able to tell the difference. These are arbitrary designations, or they at least seem to be arbitrary. There's nothing that we can see in them that makes clean and unclean distinguishable, except that they're named as such. And continuing to read, to explore what is said, you will make yourselves unclean by these. Whoever touches their carcasses will be unclean until evening. Whoever picks up one of their carcasses must wash their clothes, and they will be unclean until evening. If one of them, one of these unclean insects, falls into a clay pot, everything in it will be unclean, and you must break the pot. Any food you are allowed to eat that has come into contact with water from any such pot is unclean. And any liquid that is drunk from such a pot is unclean. Anything that one of their carcasses falls on becomes unclean. An oven or cooking pot must be broken up. They are unclean until you are to regard them as unclean. There are some other texts that tell them that certain things were made unclean, were unclean until nightfall. If you wash them with water, they became clean. We might, there's some other things that are, that seem to be arbitrary about uncleanness. And some of these things are, we look at these things and we say, that doesn't seem to make sense, so maybe it's not important. But it is. It was important. God said this is important. This is a serious matter. Just one text that we can read, do not defile yourselves by any of these creatures. Do not make yourselves unclean by means of them or be made unclean by them. I am Yahweh your God. Consecrate yourselves and be holy because I am holy. Do not make yourselves unclean by any creature that moves along the ground. I am Yahweh who brought you up out of Egypt. Be your God. Therefore be holy because I am holy. This was not a trivial thing to them. It was not a trivial thing to God. They were to consider the rules that were made, the rules for uncleanness, to be serious rules. And there are some things that made them unclean that were things that God had himself had designed, things about the way their bodies function. And we're not going to read the whole passage, but there are rules about a woman becoming pregnant, giving birth to a son, being unclean. For 33 days. If she has a son, she's unclean. She's unclean if she has a daughter for 66 days. Why the difference? Because that's what God said. And that's got to be good enough for you at some point. And uncleanness, and there are other things about, God designed features of the body that made them unclean, giving birth, discharge of a body fluid by a man, a priest trimming his beard. A house with a spreading mold was made unclean and had to be torn down. Anyone who touched an unclean person or object was regarded as unclean until nightfall or until they did something else to make themselves pure. And in some circumstances, and I won't say all, but in some circumstances, the concept of uncleanness represented sin. 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, we can read where the Apostle Paul wrote to the Corinthians, do not be yoked together with unbelievers. But what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will live with them and walk with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. Paul is quoting from Isaiah here. He's talking to the exiles and telling them to come out of the nations that practice idolatry and come out of their uncleanness and come back to Zion and be purified again. And so this is a matter that, at least in this case, meant sin. And here's another text that we can read, Leviticus the 5th chapter. If anyone becomes aware that they are guilty, if they unwittingly touch anything ceremonially unclean, by the way, the word ceremonially there is not in the original language, it's just unclean. If they touch anything unclean, whether the carcass of an unclean animal, wild or domestic, or any unclean creature that moves along the ground, and they become aware that they have become unclean, but then they come to realize their guilt, or they touch human uncleanness, anything that would make them unclean, even though they are unaware of it, but then they learn of it and realize their guilt. Or if anyone thoughtlessly takes an oath to do anything, whether good or evil, in any matter one might carelessly swear about, even though they are unaware of it, then they learn of it and realize their guilt. When anyone becomes unaware that they are guilty, aware that they are guilty in any of these matters, they must confess in what way they have sinned. As a penalty for the sin they have committed, they must bring to Yahweh a female lamb or goat for the flocks and sin offering, and the priest shall make atonement for their sin. Uncleanness, at least in some cases, at least in many cases, probably not all, meant sin. So it's not a thing, it's not a light thing. It's not a thing to be just kind of blown off. God meant them to take heed to these things. And he says this in the text in Leviticus chapter 7, but if anyone who is unclean eats any meat of the fellowship offering belonging to Yahweh, they must be cut off from their people. Anyone who touches something unclean, whether human uncleanness or an unclean animal or any unclean creature that moves along the ground, and then eats the meat of the fellowship offering belonging to Yahweh, must be cut off from their people. The expression cut off from their people is used in Exodus chapter 31, where he says, observe the Sabbath because it's holy to you. Anyone who desecrates it is to be put to death. Those who do any work that day must be cut off from their people. I don't think that the expression cut off their people always means that they're to be put to death, but it certainly implies something, a serious condition that they're to be regarded as though they were not in the fellowship of the assembly of Israel. If they have done this, if they are in this situation of being unclean. So this is something that God meant them to take seriously. Being unclean was not a light thing. All right? Now, when you think about uncleanness in Israel, when you think about the untouchables, you think about one group of people, don't you? Leviticus chapter 13, concerning lepers. Anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of their face, and cry out, unclean, unclean. As long as they have the disease, they remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp. They must live outside the camp. There are further regulations that are given, and we're not going to read all of those, as to how a person got into this situation of being unclean. If they had a skin disease, they were, after a certain amount of time, to go to the priest, and the priest would make an observation. And then there would be a time, a period of a week or 2 weeks. There might be a second observation. There might be a third. And when that patch of skin that was apparently contaminated had reached a certain point, the priest was to designate them, at that point, unclean. That was how they got to be unclean. They were designated as such by the priest upon the observation by the priest of the skin disease that they had. And there were ways that they got to be clean again, and that had to do with going back to the priest and having the priest observe what had happened to them. And after observation, the priest would designate them to be clean. All this was, there were specific rules that were set up for this. And so the untouchables among the Jews were the lepers. Now, question for us to consider. Did lepers deserve this fate? Did they deserve to be in this situation of being, having to live outside the camp, being cut off from the people? Were they being punished for some sin? If a person got leprosy, was that, Darren talked about Job this morning, and Job's friends talking about how you must have done something terrible for this to happen to you, which was not true. Did lepers do something terrible to make them afflicted with this disease? Was there being untouchable a matter of public hygiene or disease prevention? Is that why they were set outside the camp?
Yep.
There are a lot of people that do apologetics that say that this is an example. The shunning of lepers or the lepers outside the camp was an example of God teaching them about disease prevention. Please don't make that argument. That's not true. Leprosy is almost impossible to catch. You can't get it by living with a person with it. You can't get it by touching a person. You can't get it by sharing food or eating utensils with a person who has it. You can't get it by having sex with a person who has it. You almost can't catch leprosy at all. And about 95% of people are immune to it in any situation. In fact, epidemiologists say that it's easier to get leprosy for some reason from an armadillo. I don't understand that. It's easier to get leprosy from an armadillo than it is from another person. Leprosy is not a communicable disease. The isolation of lepers had nothing to do with disease prevention. Unclean, the expression of uncleanness, simply seems to refer to things that people mostly find disagreeable. If you're in the presence of a person with leprosy, it's a disfiguring disease. At a certain point, it becomes very unpleasant to observe. And so, it appears that God was just trying to make a point with them. He was trying to tell them what they looked like to him when they were sinning. And this is, you think about all the things that he talked about as being unclean, it was things that were repulsive, that most people find that they can't stand to be in the presence of. That was what it meant to be unclean. And God was trying to tell them, this is what you look like to me as sinners. And that, as best I can, there's no text that says that, by the way. If you can think of a better explanation, then I'm open to it. But certainly, when he used the term uncleanness and defilement, he was paralleling things that he had forbidden to them with the way that he regarded sin. And in fact, the inscrutability of the regulations, I think, is part of the point. God designated these things. He said, you can eat this kind of insect and touch it, but not this kind. Not because there was anything about those two insects that was particularly different from one another, but just to say, this is the choice that I have made. I have made this choice, and you live by that choice. And God does that. And we need to listen when he does it. So, what about Jesus and the unclean? Text that Glenn read for us a moment ago. We'll read it again. When Jesus came down the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, see that you don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them. So this is the text. This is the main text. Now, I went and did some research this afternoon. Let me just say this. There are different ways of looking at this, and people can have honest and productive disagreements about some of those things. But to the best of my ability to determine the research that I did, if you read this text in Greek, you would read just about the same thing. And the parallel text, what is apparently a parallel text in Mark chapter 1, reads very much the same. So the English version of this is what you would get if you read the Greek version, as best I am able to determine. There's no shades of meaning in the Greek tenses or the moods that changes what is said here. So I'm going to tell you what appears to me to be communicating again. There's some shades of disagreement that we can have on this, but this seems to be the point. Think about this. What did Jesus not do? Jesus did not change, even temporarily, the requirements of the law of Moses. The law of Moses had said, this is what you are to do if you find that you're afflicted with some kind of a skin infection, and this is what you're not to do, and this is what is to happen, this is what the priest is to do, and so on. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus did not touch the man to heal him. Jesus could have healed him without touching him. Jesus healed 10 lepers without touching them. God healed Naaman of leprosy without touching him. Jesus did not need to touch him to heal him, and the text doesn't say that he touched him and healed him. That's a possible reading of the text, but it doesn't say that. Jesus didn't do anything that was unnecessary to his purpose, and I want to emphasize this point, Jesus did not sin. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15 says that he was without sin. He wasn't a sacrifice for my sin if he was a sinner. Jesus didn't do any of those things. What he did, from the best that I can read, is he did exactly what the law said he was not allowed to do. He touched an unclean person. And if the law meant what it said, he made himself unclean in doing that. Now, I believe, as I said, I strongly believe that Jesus was without sin. But this is one of those things, like maybe the sending of the disciples through the grain fields on the Sabbath. This is one of those things that we may have to struggle with a little bit to understand exactly what's going on here. I think there's something that comes out of this that's important for us to see, as we will see in a minute. What difference does a touch make? Here's another example of Jesus doing something that was disreputable to the Jews. Not wrong, but disreputable. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. We know the story. I won't read the whole text. But Zacchaeus, Jesus says, I'm going to go to your house. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. Was associating with sinners something the Jews were supposed to do? Were they supposed to do that? Zacchaeus was probably not an honest man. It says he was a chief tax collector. He got to be a chief tax collector in general by being somewhat shady in your dealings, because that's how you got to be rich. And Zacchaeus implies that in what he says. So Jesus goes to the house of a man whom he knows to be at least disreputable in terms of the Jews, if not outright dishonest. And Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possession to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times that amount. Is this evangelism? He made a mark, didn't he? Jesus said to him, today salvation has come in this house, because this man too as a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. And the point here, and the point in the touching of the leper is, Jesus did not take a hands-off approach to his work. He was there, right there, with the people that he came to save. Now, I'm going to say again, if I haven't made it clear, I'm going to say again, I don't understand everything about Jesus' actions relative to the law. I have made the statement about what it seems, what the text seems to me to indicate. And you have room to disagree with that if you wish. So I'm not claiming to understand everything, but Jesus came to make right. This I am sure of. Jesus came to make right what sin had made wrong. Leprosy was there ultimately because of human sin. Jesus came to make that right. And he did not allow himself to be deterred by things that we find disagreeable or things that the Jews found disagreeable. They found disagreeable to associate with the tax collector. Jesus wasn't deterred by that. He practiced evangelism in that situation because that was the person who needed it. He touched a leper because that was the person who needed that touch. In making himself unclean, if he did indeed make himself unclean, in order to heal uncleanness, Jesus showed the triumph of mercy over corruption. God made him who knew no sin to become sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. I don't believe this text teaches that Jesus was made a sinner. But God, in some way, that I will not attempt to explain or claim to understand, put him in our place. Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. In some way that I don't claim to be able to explain completely, God made him, put him in our place. In Jesus' time, touching a leper was a stumbling block. The word, Greek word is scandalon, is a word from which we get our word scandal. It was a scandal. Jesus, if you had been there observing, and you were a Jew trying to catch Jesus and doing something that he shouldn't have been doing, you wouldn't have seen the leper cleansed. You would have seen Jesus reaching out and touching a leper. That's what would have been the scandal. Do not imagine that what Jesus did to remove your sin was any less a scandal, was any less a stumbling block, was any less an outrage. What difference does a touch make? Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Are we willing to follow Jesus in his ministry to the unclean? We're studying evangelism. You think we're going to convert many rich people, Terry? God loves rich people, right? You think we're going to convert many of them? We'll try. We're more likely to find people who know they're hurting, right? We're more likely to have a willing listeners there. Are we going to follow Jesus down that path? Because that's where he went. We could say, well, there aren't many lepers for us. I mean, I don't know any lepers. Do you? I don't know any. So I could say, I mean, easy to stand up here and tell you all, if a leper walked in the building, I'd run up and give him a big hug. I don't know whether I would even do that or not. I don't know many lepers, okay? I don't know any lepers, in fact. So what about, and are we talking about lepers? This is why only lepers. Well, I mean, there's lots of things that we can say to ourselves to kind of, you know, push this off and say, well, I mean, it doesn't apply. This story doesn't apply to me. This story of Jesus touching the leper doesn't apply to me because I don't know any lepers. Blow it off. Maybe not. So what about the other? The other, as I'm using the term, is any group of people who are in a circumstance that if you were in that circumstance, you would find intolerable. If you were in that circumstance, you'd want someone to reach out and help you as a fellow human being. Now, let me just say this, because I don't want to be misunderstood. It's not our job to change all the things in this world that are wrong. It's not our job to clean up all the slums, and it's not our job to feed all the people that don't get enough to eat. That's not why we're here. Our job is about the next life, not this one. And I would add, just in case you might misunderstand, there are no real political solutions to any real problems in this world. There aren't any. The solution to the problem of sin is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's not the Salvation Army. However, we can also go to the other extreme and close our eyes to opportunities that we have to make a good influence, to make a good impact on people and have a good influence, and just simply stay out of the muck and the mire and stay out of off the road that Jesus trod. We push the category of things over which we have no control into a lot of things that we can. We don't control them, but we can influence them. And we have a group of people that are untouchables, that are for us. The other are for us untouchables. They are not like us. Your people are not like us. They're in unfortunate circumstances because they're stupid, or they're lazy, they made bad decisions, or they have a misfortune to live under a corrupt government, or all kinds of excuses that we can make. And God saw that they're less deserving than us, and He doesn't want us to help them. It would be a thwarting of His will. We would never get into that situation. They got just what they deserve. And they are the other, and we don't have to care about them. We don't have to have anything to do with them. They can be banished from our camp. They can be cut off from our people. And we don't have to think about them. There's not been very many years ago that some Christians considered people whose skin was a different color to be the other. That's how the conservative religious movement, political movement in this country got started in the 1970s. It started in 1971 when there's a Supreme Court decision that said you can set up a private university if you want, and you can exclude African Americans from attending that university if you want, but you can't make that tax deductible. And when that decision came down from the Supreme Court, the guy, I won't name him, you would know his name, whose university that was, said, I'm going to change that. And that's how he started. He started the moral majority, and that was the reason for it. Because he wanted to be able to say, these people are the other. Now, I can talk about this because I was raised in Mississippi, a state that has the Confederate battle flag as a part of its state flag. And I went to school in Alabama, a state that made interracial marriage legal in the year 2000. I know something about what I'm talking about. It is a great blessing to me. I think it's a great blessing. I find it a great blessing to be in a congregation. It has people of all ethnic backgrounds in it. Thank you. African Americans and Hispanics and anybody that wants to come into this congregation. We've had Chinese people in here in the past, and if they come in and they want to be a member here, we'll have them here in the future. We can have anybody of any ethnic background can be a member here, and I think that's a terrific thing. But you know what? That's not really the test. That's not really the test for me, and it's not really the test for you. The test is not whether I regard Chris Jones with affection, or Rudy Pena with affection, or the Culbreth family, or the Lees. It's not really whether I reach out and hug them. I can do that because they have come to me and said, I want to be part of your community. The test is whether I see someone in another situation, maybe a stressful situation, whose skin is a different color from mine. How do I respond to that person that I don't know? That's the test. That's the test. Are they the other, or are they people that I could reach with the gospel? That's the question. To all of us, especially those who've been privileged by our ethnic background, the test is whether, when we see people, we encounter people unexpectedly, we can treat them as people for whom Christ died, or we can treat them as threats to us, as the other. To Jesus Christ, you and I are the other. We are the ones that are unclean. We are the ones that put ourselves outside the camp. We are the ones that made ourselves disreputable to God. We are those. To Jesus Christ, we are those. And he came to us. We are in a situation in which he never would have put himself, and did not. But he reached out and touched us. Sinners who are as repugnant to God as any leper would be to us or to any Jew. He had compassion on them and healed their sick. I have compassion on these people, for they are hungry. Now let me go back and reemphasize the point. Our job here is not to deal with people's physical welfare primarily. Our job is their eternal destiny. We need to keep that in view. Because we can turn the church into something that is completely different from what God meant it to be. So let's get that point. But having got that point, reaching out to the other is one way we make a difference. When Jesus' disciples asked him this question, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents? He was born blind. Jesus replied, neither this man nor his parents sinned. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. So that the works of God might be displayed in him. Maybe this world is the way it is. Maybe the bad things that are in this world are there, so that people can see the compassion of Christ in us. You know, if this world, if we had come into a perfect world, we would not be able to change it without making it worse. We didn't come into a perfect world. We can change it and we can make it better. Harry Rice used to say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. We're going to be judged for the way that we treat the other. Jesus said, whatever you do not do for the least of these, you do not do for me. And the least of these is the other. He was challenging the Jews to reach out to people they regarded as unclean. Today, he's challenging us to reach out with compassion, to be children of our Father in heaven, to go to him. The high priest carries the blood of animals into the most holy place as a sin offering, but the bodies are burned outside the camp. And so Jesus also suffered outside the city gate to make people holy through his own blood. Let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace that he bore. For here we do not have an enduring city. They were looking for a city that has become. If we can help you to be obedient to the gospel, we want to do that at this time. Would you come forward as we stand and sing the song, Dan Select?